on page 97, the respected supreme divinity said, who performs all actions without dependency on the fruits or effects of action. He is established in truth and renunciation and is a man of union, not he who is without fire or without action. And here by fire, I believe he's talking about passion. You got to have a passion for what you're doing. You can't do it without, you can't pay attention unless you have passion. So when we worship, we want to worship passionately. The whole concept of being dispassionate, is the fruit of Vedanta. It is not the path of Tantra. It's the realization where you regard all as being equal and therefore nothing is special to you. And that's the concept of being dispassionate, is that no one individual can evoke a greater passion than another because you love all the same. However, when we worship, we want to love someone more than all the others. We want to love the Divine Mother passionately. We want to worship passionately. So the concept is not to become devoid of passion, it's to become devoid of misdirected passion. The passions that take us away from our goals, the passions that get us into trouble. But certainly, if you're going to worship, you better do it passionately, otherwise it's not worth doing at all. In fact, whatever we do in life is worthy of being done with passion. In our cosmic puja, we worship eight forms of passion. Ugra chanda prachanda cha, chandogra chanda naika, chanda chanda bati cheba, chandarupa ati chandika. These are the eight forms of passion which come out of the chandi. And they say, these passions, if you direct them towards the Divine Mother, are going to take you along the path. So, not he who is without fire or without action. Remember, we can't even maintain our bodies without action. O son of he who is without prejudice, Arjuna, know that which is called union is the same as being established in truth and renunciation. Yoga and sannyas are one and the same. For no one becomes a man of union without renouncing personal desire. Same thing we were talking about in last night's chapter, chapter 5. Action is said to be the cause for the wise man who is striving to union. Peace and freedom from external objects is the method of reaching to union. Then one is said to have reached to union. When in all desires he is established in truth and renunciation, he remains without attachment to the objects of sense in all actions. Without attachment. Let the soul be raised by the soul, and do not let the soul be lowered. Only the soul is the friend of the soul. Only the soul is the enemy of the soul. Whatever is in our minds is what our consciousness is going to reflect. We are the only cause of friendship or enmity. Just how we regard our relationships in life. With what kind of attachment can we let go? Please?
It's meant to be soul here, not ego. You would think ego is...
No, the term is used atma. Yes, the term is not ahamkar. Atmeva hyatmano bandur. Atma eva hya atmano bandur. It is only the soul who is the friend. It is only the soul, ripur atmana, he who has the ripus. He is the enemy.
But is the ego also the enemy of the soul? Or is...
If it's a little ego, the lower ego, which takes us into the worldliness of selfish attachments, he is the enemy. And that is what the soul becomes or thinks himself to be.
Maharaj, it's looking with the path, even child's looking with the ইয়ে আমাদের কিভাবে ওখানে পৌঁছাবো একটু বোঝাতে হবে অষ্টাঙ্গ যোগের দ্বারা।
Well, we can talk about Ashtanga Yoga here. However, we've already spoken about that. The soul, be raised by the soul. Do not let the soul be lowered. Always strive for perfection in every action that we perform. For he who has conquered his soul by his soul, he has actually made his soul a friend to his soul. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It is a state of renunciation, but also we're ascribing to the souls the quality of the ego. And if the ego is a divine ego that's filled with light and says, I am the servant of God, then the soul has become his own friend. Remember, this is Shankya philosophy. We're talking about the discrimination between the eternal soul, the eternal ego and the lower ego, the transient body, the nature of the body, the ego of attachment as opposed to the ego that says, Aham Brahmashmi, I am one with God.
But that's constantly changing and the state of truth, so that's like the total yoga. And one in a million would be able to reach that.
We're going to hear that right here in the text. This is the sixth chapter, it's the text on yoga. But for he whose soul is in the position of an enemy, he treats his soul as an enemy. Who's got conflict and confusion inside and turmoil inside, that individual is constantly in turmoil, constantly in conflict. They regard themselves as their own enemy, or they regard themselves as their own friend. Who has conquered his soul has the peace of the Supreme Soul, maintaining equilibrium while experiencing cold or hot, pleasure or pain, honor or insult. That soul who has conquered his senses, who remains fixed in the delight of knowledge and wisdom, who is in harmony, who regards earth, stone, or gold as of equal value, he is said to be a man of union. That's why Ramakrishna went to the Ganga and said, Mati taka taka mati, and threw them both in the river, the money and the earth. He picked up handfuls of Ganga mati, of the soil from the bank of the Ganga. He threw both money and mud into the river. And he said, Mata taki,
mati taka. Mati means art.
They are both of equal value.
Why? Oh, that's like mati is no value.
Just like taka, it's no value. They are of equal value. He excels who, from a good heart, without any selfish interest, regards friends, enemies, and those in between, the contemptible and the beloved, the virtuous and the sinful, with equal intelligence. A man of union should always remain in secretive communion with his own soul, in oneness, controlling the awareness of his soul without desire, greed, or jealousy. Such an individual should establish his seat for meditation in a clean place, neither too high nor too low, covered by cloth, deerskin, or kush grass. Being seated there on the meditation seat, he should make his mind one-pointed, control the awareness of the functions of sense, and commune in the union with the purity of his own soul. Still, without movement, he should hold his body, head, and neck in equipoise. Staring at the tip of his nose, he should not look in other directions. Fixed in the vow to move towards God, without fear, with peace in his soul, controlling his mind, with awareness on me, he should undertake to unite with me, the Supreme. Thus the man of union controls his mind and is always in union with his own soul. Established in me, he attains the peace and ecstasy of the ultimate equilibrium. Clarity of pure devotion. Union is not for one who eats excessively, nor for one who does not eat sufficiently. Neither is it for he who sleeps too much, nor for one who does not sleep enough.
We talked about yoga and sannyas. Now we are talking about yoga. How can one reach to that yoga and sannyas without? How can one reach to that state of renunciation without doing yoga?
Well, I'm sorry you're coming into the middle of the class, because we discussed that last night. The paths of yoga are not separate. There is only one path of union, and they are all the aspects of our spiritual discipline are united in that union. They are only discussed and described separately so that we can intellectually understand them. Without bhakti, there is no karma. Without gyan, there is no dhyan. Dhyan, gyan, bhakti, and karma. Meditation, wisdom, devotion, and action unite in union. The man of union is in union in his consumption and in his abstinence. In union with efforts of all actions, in union with his dreams and with his knowledge, and this union destroys all pain. When the objects of consciousness are fully controlled and the soul rests without the touch of desire, then one is said to be in union. The soul who practices union, who has controlled the objects of consciousness in union, is compared to a still flame without flicker in a place with no wind. When by the practice of union the objects of consciousness are restrained and the mind ceases from motion, and when the soul is perceived by the soul is satisfied. He knows that universal happiness beyond the senses and beyond that which can be understood by the intellect, established in which he does not move from the true state. Having gained that, he thinks there can be no greater gain. Being established in that, he remains unmoved even by the greatest pain. Let the disassociation from the union with pain be known as yoga, union. We've disassociated ourselves from all pain. We're in union. There is no I. If there is an I, there is pain. The very fact that I am separate from God is painful. When we have removed all pain, we've removed all I. And that is called yoga, chitta vritti nirodha. The cessation, the prohibition of all modifications and the objects of awareness. This union should be practiced with firm determination and unwavering consciousness. By renouncing all of the determinations born of endless desires and even controlling all of the organs of knowledge and action from all sides. With the intellect held securely, gently let the mind cease from motion. Make the mind reside in the soul and do not allow other thoughts. No matter what causes the restless, unsteady mind to roam, let him restrain it from that. He will bring it under control in the soul alone. Come back here, mind. Don't wander in the unconsciousness. For the man of union comes the ultimate happiness. For he who has peace in his mind, his passions are at peace. He is without iniquity and has verily become the supreme divinity. The soul who always practices this becomes a man of union free from iniquity. Easily he touches supreme divinity and enjoys infinite happiness. He sees his soul residing in all beings, and all beings in his soul. The soul who is united in union sees everything, everywhere in equilibrium. It's all in the perfect balance of yoga. It's all an extension of me. It is my soul. That's what it feels like. It just feels like there is no end of me. It's all in balance and equilibrium. It's all an extension of me. It is me. As far as you can perceive, every sound, every form that you can conceive, it's just another aspect of myself praising myself for my delight. No, we said the asana should be not too high and not too low. Not the mind. We are bringing the mind into the soul. Bringing the mind inside. Okay. He who sees me everywhere in all, and sees all everywhere in me, to him I never become lost, nor is he ever lost to me. He who is established in oneness and worships me, residing in all beings in every circumstance, he dwells with me. He lives in union with me. Clarity of pure devotion. He who perceives equilibrium everywhere just as in his own soul, he is the same in pleasure as in pain. He is regarded as a man of supreme union. Clarity of pure devotion said, O slayer of too much, Krishna, I do not perceive any substance of stillness for this union of equilibrium which you are teaching. All existence is restless. O doer of all, Krishna, the mind is very restless, turbulent, strong, and stubborn. To gain mastery of the mind is as difficult as to control the wind. The respected Supreme Divinity said, O one of mighty arms, Arjuna, without a doubt the movement of the mind is difficult to control. But, O son of she who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna, by practicing freedom from attachment, it can be controlled. I agree that union is impossible of attainment by a soul who has not self-control. But it is possible for the self-controlled soul who strives to attain it by proper means. Clarity of pure devotion said, If one has faith, yet cannot control his mind, which wanders away from perfection in union, what end does he meet, O doer of all, Krishna? Is it not that fallen from both paths, the path of union and the path of devotion, without the support of either, he perishes like a torn cloud, O one of mighty arms, Krishna, a seeker of truth, deluded in the path? You ought to completely dispel my doubts, doer of all, Krishna, for there is no other more capable to dispel them than you. The respected Supreme Divinity said, Son of she who excels, Arjuna, neither does he find destruction here nor in the next world. My son, for anyone who performs meritorious actions does not find a bad result. Having attained to the worlds of those who perform meritorious conduct, and having dwelt there for a season of eternity, one fallen from union will be born in the house of the pure and respected. Or she may be born in a family of wise practitioners of union. To attain a birth like this in this world is very difficult. There she obtains the complete union with the intelligence of her former body, and she makes ever greater efforts to attain perfection, O son of action, Arjuna. She is verily helpless but to continue her former practice. Even she who asks about the practice of union be, moves beyond talking about God. The man of union who strives with great sincerity through many births completely purifies all impurities and then reaches the highest station. The man of union has a superior attainment to the performer of purifying austerities. Even he is thought superior to men of knowledge. Again, he is superior to the performers of action. Therefore, O clarity of pure devotion, be a man of union. Of all men of union, he who worships me with such faith that his inner being is merged in me, I think him to be the most attentive. Oh. Now, let the debate rage.
Swami, it seems to be saying that the man of union is in union whether there are modifications or not. It isn't just a question of being nearly called the samadhi, we're always there.
He is in union for so long he remains in union.
Which means the world could be there. I mean,
the world can be there, and he will be in union with the world. No question. So long as he is free from selfishness, he can maintain his union. And then again, when one moves back into their selfish nature, thinking that I must take care of this body, I mean, there are only a very few people who say, I can't eat until everyone around me has eaten. Many of us say, I'm hungry. When Sri Ma gets hungry, what does? She cooks a meal for 30 people. She feeds everybody in the immediate vicinity. Because she's hungry. She has that realization. She's hungry. So she feeds everybody who's around her. Did any of you ever walk into the trailer when Sri Ma was hungry and you didn't get fed? Any of you? I venture to say not one of us has ever walked into the vicinity of Sri Mom when she was hungry and didn't get fed, because that's her consciousness. The others of us say, I'm hungry, I'm going to get something to eat. And we move out of that union into our selfish consideration. I'm thinking myself to be a limited form responsible to feed this body. We don't say, I'm hungry, I better make something for everyone in the ashram. And that's the difference. We move out of the union and we move into the union. We move out of the union, we move into the union. And srishti, sthiti, loy, the wheel of life, creation, preservation, transformation, it's continuing. Incessantly, with the regularity of a water wheel. So, yes, you remain in union, even while in action, so long as we are free from selfishness. When selfishness comes again and says, wait, you have to take care of number one, the union vanishes. Now, we know the way we got into the union. And we know the way we came back. And once we've practiced going in and coming out, we know when to let go. So often, many of us come to a precipice and look over the edge and withdraw. Because we have an apprehension of some immediate harm coming to us. But one time you look over the precipice and jump. And when you realize that nothing bad has befallen you, you have no hesitation to jump again and again and again. Moving into samadhi is a similar experience, because samadhi is very much like a precipice. We approach the edge of total dissolution and recoil. Most of the time, the ego says, I don't want to let go. The ego brings us back into thought and grabs onto the attachments of the world and says, I might fall. What will happen to me if I let go? And many of us have had that experience where we're just on the verge of entering into total dissolution. And we grabbed onto something and said, don't take me. I'm not ready. I can't give up all of my attachments. And we held on for dear life and came back to the world. Once we have been blessed with the success in entering into that state of consciousness, we no longer fear. And we come to the precipice and say, yeah, take me. I don't have to hold on any longer. And I'm not afraid to jump because I know you're not going to keep me very long. What's a few hours in the scope of the 100 years that I'm on this planet? That's where we train ourselves to let go again and again, so then it becomes easier. Just like in the evening, when the farmers are coming home from their fields, they drive their ox carts out from the field into the road home. And the roads are so rutted that once the oxen are pointed towards home, the farmers climb in the back and go to sleep on a pile of straw and let the oxen take them home themselves. The oxen know the way. The wagon wheels just sit in the ruts and they move right to their homes. In the same way, we train our consciousness to move inside, deeper and deeper. And anytime we give ourselves the permission to let go, the oxen know the way. The wagon wheels follow the ruts in the road. The oxen can come home. In the same way, we can bring the kundalini up through the chakras, focus our attention inside, and cultivate the habit of letting go when we approach the precipice of samadhi. And that's what this chapter is talking about.
Now, this fear of presence.
I think I have some confusion. I just want to rephrase some of the things that here we talked about, let's say, control of mind, seeing God everywhere, seeing everything as the extension of your soul, God, and God in everything, and getting in union with your own soul. Right. Am I thinking right?
Yes. Very, very, very nicely. The perfection of union. The perfection of union is called samadhi. Sa means altogether. Ma means the measurement. Dhi means the mind. All is the measurement of mind. Samadhi. Samadhi is the totality of existence is the measurement of our mind. We move into union with the totality of existence into samadhi.
Is samadhi, I'm trying to understand the literal meaning of samadhi itself, but you describe, is samadhi is like a state of meditation, or samadhi is like getting in touch with the inner soul and seeing everything else as the extension of the same soul?
Well, they're one and the same thing. Merely greater degrees of intensity. There are various forms of samadhi, a bhav samadhi, a savikalpa samadhi, and a nirvikalpa samadhi. So in the lower stages of samadhi, when you have this bhava, this attitude, this apprehension of communion, You're looking inside and seeing all within you and all outside you.
Okay. And along the same line, let's say, before I get to that stage, if I am very well centered, focused, I'm not getting pulled by emotions or anything, but still, in order to get to that stage, get in touch with my inner soul, I have to go through all the prints of karmas or all the karmas I have to do, right?
Yes.
So how can I get in samadhi? I mean, if I have this big debit balance of all the karmas, and although yes, I'm not getting jerked around by emotion, then how can I get in samadhi? I need to get over the karma. Also.
Well, you have to perform the karma before you can go into samadhi.
And how can anybody take sannyasa from karma?
You don't take sannyas from karma, you take sannyas through karma.
Okay.
By means of karma, by practicing renunciation and truth in karma, you attain freedom through karma, not freedom from karma. You understand the difference? This is the key ingredient of the Gita. Again and again, they are counseling us to perform our karma, our actions, without attachment, and thereby attain freedom through action, and not freedom from action.
Okay.
You get some time after you have become a sadhu, an efficient performer of action, a sadhu, one who is established in efficiency, then you get to spend more and more time in meditation posture, looking within and not having to look outside.
So I think my question would be, if there is a karma left, and there is a karma left,
yes.
and I'm trying to find renunciation through karma, but at the same time, I'm not getting jerked by the emotion, can I still get in samadhi?
Yes.
How?
He just told you, sit on an asana that's neither too high nor too low. Control your senses. Focus your attention inside. And move step by step, gradually, gently leading your mind away from the objects of sense. He gave us a complete description in this last chapter. You can only take the leap for as long as she gives you her grace. And after she sends you, after you've been filled with grace, she'll send you back to do more karma. When you take the sankalpa, then you can attain siddhi. She will only allow you to move into samadhi for a short period of time. And once we realize that, then we're not afraid to go. In fact, we look forward to it.
This fear, Swami. Now, this you're talking about when the very subtlest sense of being, or I am, this goes. There's fear, because up to that point, I don't see why there'd be fear. I mean, most people who meditate are getting peace and bliss. If the gross ego goes, you're just in bliss. There's no fear. I've never experienced fear.
Absolutely.
But I don't go very deep. So you're talking about the very last step.
Remember in chapter 10 of Chandi, where the self conceit was fighting the battle with the goddess, and he would fight with his sword and fight with his pike and fight with his spear and shoot arrows at her. He strove in every way that he could not to surrender to the goddess. In chapter 3 of Chandi, we find Mahishasura, the great ego, is fighting and changing his form in every way to avoid surrendering to the goddess. And this is that fear that, what will happen if I surrender? You see, in English, surrender is the last thing we want to do when somebody has a gun to your head and you have no recourse and you have no other way out. You say, I surrender. And in spiritual life, surrender is the goal. It's the objective. Now, how do we reconcile these two diametrically opposing philosophies of life? From our childhood, we've been taught that surrender is the last thing you want to consider. When you have no other alternative, you can think about surrender. And our spiritual value that says surrender brings peace. Hurry up and surrender. Now, every time we go to surrender, the ego comes up and says, don't do it. You still have a chance. There's still hope. All is not lost yet. Don't surrender. This is the battle that's going on. Every time, as we move deeper and deeper into states of communion, of samadhi, of perfect meditation, where our senses are not wandering outside, we're looking deeper and deeper and deeper, and suddenly we come to that precipice where it's either do or don't. And it's a difficult decision to make the first time we make it. The first time we make that decision, it is a very difficult decision to say, I trust and I'm letting go. And I'm going over the edge. A little ratification, validation.
So if we haven't experienced fear, we just haven't come to the edge, period. That's all there is to
it. Well, maybe you experience it in a different way.
No, sir,
but the chandi,
the mind takes you away.
The mind takes you away. That's the fear.
That's just a bad habit.
Or then we're debating semantics. Whether you call it a bad habit or fear, something is precluding or limiting the experience. The mind is taking you away for some reason. That is the only reason we could define is that the ego fears letting go. And that's why he's sending more thoughts. Attack! Akraman! Fight with that nasty goddess! She's only going to make you surrender. She'll make you a servant of circumstances, and then what's going to happen to you? You don't want to be a servant of circumstances, Udas. Be a somebody. Become rich and famous and important in this world. Get more things for yourself, and you'll have status in the eyes of humanity. How devious that ego is constantly saying, you need more. Too much and too little. Self-conceit and self-deprecation. All the generals in the armies, they're constantly poking at us. Try to let go. Now, you call it it's a bad habit of thought. I'm saying it's the fear of the ego to let go. These are all semantical differences. It doesn't make any difference. The point is, there is a hesitation.
Is that in Buddhists, many Buddhists talk about this moment before samadhi, and they say the terror is just unbelievable. It's you can't even imagine the terror that comes into the mind. So, you know, it almost puts one off.
I am glad I'm not a Buddhist.
Well, that's what I thought you were talking
about. No. It's not the terror is unbelievable. It's just that moment that sends us, that draws us back, and where we can't make the decision to let go. And so we don't. We come back and we see visions and we have dreams and we have this and we experience. And we can talk about our experiences. That's not it. The objective is not to know another experience. The objective is to know who is having the experience. Remember, realization is not an experience. Realization is an immediate cognition, an apprehension in the moment. It's a knowing. It's not a question of having an experience. It's a question of being the experiencer, of letting go of all that can be experienced. Everything is your experience. There is no one thing that you can point to and say, that's the experience. It's na iti, na iti, neti, neti. It's not this, it's not that. That's all they could describe it as. So what should we describe about it or talk about it? We can only talk about the asana, the pranayama, and what it's like to move deeper and deeper and let go more and more. That we can discuss. The Rishi said it's not this experience, it's not that experience. Please. Sorry, I'm looking at Tiagbori. However, the better term is Samarpan. Now, remember, Sama means equilibrium, and Arpanam means offering. I offer myself in equilibrium, Samarpan. It's a little bit different than surrender or else. Samarpan is like the highest achievement, to offer myself in equilibrium. I become udas. O, u, ma. Srishti, sthiti, loy. A means the creation. U means the circumstance. And ma means the perfection, the culmination. Om. U means circumstances, what is. And das means a servant. Udas is someone who is a servant of circumstances. He has made samarpan, offered himself in equilibrium. He is tiag because he has no attachment. And these are the terms that we're trying to understand, to discern in our discourse tonight. Om Sang Saraswati Nama.
Jai Ma.
Jai Ma. Thank you. Let's regroup in a half an hour and we'll start singing the Chandipat about...